CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CGM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Today's episode is devoted to catching up on segments that, for reasons of timing, wasn't previously able to air. These are post-dated segments, so some of the events referred to may already have happened.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with...
My name is Olivia Patricia.
And they're going to be telling us a little bit about mental health and student life here at the University of Windsor. So, what have you observed in your time?
I've been at the university for 2 years. I'm going into my third year this fall. Mental health is like a really tricky topic here on campus, because it's not like they're not trying. They work really hard to provide resources. It's just that there's not enough.
I'd imagine they're not as well advertised as they could be, because when it comes to mental health, there's always that perceived stigma around whether I should really be open about the situation.
Mm. Well, I'm going to turn that off. I know I lived in residence my first year, and I knew quite a bit about mental health, as they would be shoving all these flyers under our doors. And it was very, like, in your face. If you need mental health support, it's here. But I guess, like, the unfortunate thing about that is, like, for example, not all the helplines that they provided were the greatest. There was one in particular. I'm not going to name it, because I heard from someone that they're trying to replace that one helpline. But I suffer from anxiety. I guess that's important to say. I've been diagnosed with anxiety since, like, elementary school. I take meds for it. There's no shame in that. But I do suffer from anxiety, and sometimes I get panic attacks. And living away from home in my first year is very scary. And there was a couple times that I did have a panic attack, and in those times I called one of those helplines, and I was just like, I just need someone to talk to. I need someone to breathe with me. I was put on hold for about half an hour, and then someone picked up, and they weren't there to help me. They were like, okay, what's your name? Where's your address? Let me get all this information from you to put on file. Oh, yeah, and then it'll be about half an hour before we can get you with an actual therapist or someone to talk to. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? I just, like, want to stop having this panic attack, and I need someone to help me. This is not helpful.
For someone in a severe crisis, that could be an extreme risk, in so much as not everyone has a half hour.
No. That half hour for some people could be the difference between possibly self-harming or not.
So In that case, do you have any advice for someone who might be just realizing they're struggling with anxiety and just wanting to seek the right supports, but not knowing how to go about it necessarily?
Mm-hmm. It's tricky because there's not always the right amount of resources, especially once you leave the high school scene. I didn't go to high school in Windsor, but at my high school, thankfully, I did get a lot of mental health support. But leaving into, like, coming to Windsor, I realized that there, especially in university, there wasn't as much mental health support. Like, there was a wait list for the school counselors. So I had to go out of my way to find my own therapist and, like, have to pay a bit more money for that. But I guess my advice for anyone who would be struggling with anxiety or just found out that what they're dealing with is anxiety, is to find safe people in your life. Maybe it's a close friend, a parent, someone from home you can call, and let them know. There's no shame in having mental health issues. In fact, the more that we talk about it, the more that I find that it's not really something... It's more common than people think. So, yeah, talk to someone. More than likely, they're also dealing with something similar. And you can figure out ways to support each other. I know I had a really special person my first year at university. And he was like, I can come in whenever you're having a panic attack. And we can just sit and we can do crafts. And, you know, I'll be there for you. And I know that meant a lot to me.
So... do you see the services that are provided making any steps in the right direction? You mentioned they're trying to replace that one helpline, but do you see anything that would be more of a day-to-day progression?
I would have to look into that. I'm not, like, up to date and following with it. I don't know.
So how would you suggest that we get around those myths and those stigmas and shames concerning mental health? I mean, thing is, you've seen probably in recent years that there's been a spotlight cast on it, and things only live in myth if they're kept vague mm-hmm. or out of a person's immediate equation. Do you have any thoughts as to how people could better arm themselves with knowledge when it comes to fact versus fiction?
Yeah, I mean, well, the pandemic, like, a lot of people suffered from mental health issues just as a result of that. So, and I feel like talking about it, I know that sounds so silly, but having conversations like these ones, talking to your friends, reading literature about it, following Instagram accounts that talk about mental health, and just making it known that this is a thing that so many people struggle with, and there's no shame in struggling with it. There's no shame in needing, for example, anxiety medication or antidepressants. I'm on anxiety medication, and that's something I'm not afraid to share, because I remember when I first started, I was so ashamed that I needed to medicate to be able to operate normally. But the more that I found people talk about it, a lot of people actually take antidepressants or anxiety medication, and it's actually a wonderful thing that allows me to live my day-to-day life without having panic attacks.
You bring up an interesting point in so much as, a wheelchair, for example, is simply a mobility aid. Mm-hmm. It is not who the person is. It is simply something to let them live at their fullest.
Yeah, yeah. And it's important to remember that mental health issues, a lot of the time with anxiety, I'm not a doctor or a scientist, but it has nothing to do with who you are as a person. I think that's a really big thing. it's literally this passage in your brain that's so used to getting fired off. For example, in the pandemic, we were so anxious all the time, so that passage got stronger and stronger. So now that fight or flight, I guess, is like a lot stronger than it was before the pandemic. And pretty much medication just kind of filters that out a bit and helps out your brain.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this.
Thank you, Cam, for having me.
It's my pleasure.
In this segment of our show, Kelsey Farrell will be giving us an update on About Face. So what's the latest with your work with About Face?
So we're working on a campaign right now, and it's called My Difference Should Make No Difference, and it's an employment campaign, so it's aimed at employers and companies and human resources to educate about social differences in the workplace and how like employers can create a more inclusive and diverse workplace for people with facial differences. And that's something that we're working on right now. And then September, this upcoming September, is Perineal Facial Acceptance Month, so we are we're working on that as well. Plans for Perineal Facial Acceptance Month. So those are two of the big things that we're working on right now.
So I'm wondering, how do you go about reaching out to those employers that that you want to change the dynamic with?
That's a great question. We reach out on social media, so we have we posted up the campaign, and some of the employers have come to us that way. And then we reach out via mail, or like traditional mail, or just trying to find contacts at companies that we think would be receptive to the mission of the campaign. So, we find companies that we think would be open to the training and this campaign, and reach out to them either via social media or traditional mail, and send information about the campaign. We have an informational webinar in October that companies can attend. So we reach out. We generally reach out to the companies to see if they're interested in participating.
So, I'm kind of curious, do you have any advice for someone with a facial difference who might be trying to get into the workforce and be included?
Yeah, that's a good question. My advice is to really research the company and know a lot about the company and everything that like you would do. And ask, like, do something, do what, you know, everyone else would have to for a job interview, building company, things like that. But also, it's a personal choice whether you disclose information about your facial difference or not. So making that decision, whether, you know, whether you're comfortable with that. And just recognizing, you know, like just knowing the company, knowing, being confident, and going in knowing that you have the qualifications and you don't have to, at all disclose your facial difference, but if you're comfortable doing so, then you can also do that.
So, in recent times, with About Face, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, we offer both virtual programs and now we're back to in-person programs. So, there's been, in the past, some parents that have contacted us after these programs, and they say, thank you so much for hosting these programs, for bringing families together, and for making their child feel welcome and like they belong. And when we get feedback like that from the programs that we host, it really shows why we do what we do here. We bring people together and make people feel connected and like part of the community. And when we can do that, it's a really great feeling to see families of like kids or anyone with facial differences come together and connect and just be able to be themselves. So when we get people that just love coming out to our events, it really makes a difference to all of us here. So I think those are the best stories. And we get those after almost all of the events that we do. So it's really a good feeling.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Whether you're on the go or staying home, make CJAM the soundtrack to your day. Tune into 99.1 FM on your radio or visit cjam.ca to listen live or access past shows. You can also stream us right from iHeartRadio. Just visit iHeartRadio.ca or download the iHeartRadio app. And if you feel like it, connect with us on social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at CJMFM. Keep yourself close to the music. CJM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Olivia Patricia told us a little bit about their journey through the school system and mental health supports, and Kelsey Farrell gave us an update on About Face. In this segment of our show, Susanna Acadius will be telling us a little bit about Theatre Terrific.
Sure.
So, can you tell me a bit about Theatre Terrific?
Can I tell you a bit? Okay, how to put that into a bit. it was started way back in 1985, by a group of parents who had kids that were disabled, all kinds of disability, and there was no place for them to, you know, create a performance or to put on a show or to be seen or heard. And that's how it originally started. And yeah, it's grown and developed into, I've been with them since, 2004. I think that's right. And yeah, we tell true stories. I think if you wanted to put us in a nutshell, the best way to describe would be it's a very collaborative process. People come into the space. Let's say we're going to do a fringe show or another show. And the whole point is that, first of all, really don't care what your experience is. I actually even don't want to see a resume. Just let's see how we can be together. And so we start out in a ritual form and just in a very respectful way that we hear and see each other. And then from there, we can sort of get into the work. But it just to make it very clear, whenever we start anything or do anything, there is no hierarchy. No one is up there or down here. That you've come into the space and are willing to take a risk, willing to work, willing to, you know, work hard and share. That's how it kind of works. If I can humbly say what my skill may be, is I say I'm a good knitter. That the rhythms, the colors, the all of the things that go into building a performance originally comes from those who are there in the space that have gathered to work together. So, I'm always in awe, and I'm always a student. I just say I'm a perpetual student.
So I'm curious. But,
yeah, so that's, I don't know if that, has that kind of explained it in a reasonable way? Or
absolutely. So in modern times, how do you reach out to the disability population to let them know that this space does exist?
Okay. You know, we reach out. Part of the thing is, and I'm going to say this, because our shows have always included everyone. How do you reach out to the disability community? Well, we send out, we have a newsletter that goes out. We know a lot of organizations that, you know, different disability organizations that support all sorts of, you know, a wide variety. But part of the thing is that, and I always say this, is that we bring people together who may identify with disability, who may not identify with disability, who may be young, who may be old, who may have a, come from a different culture, who may not even speak English. The point is that when you bring people together to create something, everybody has, I always tell people, you know, you've got a lived perspective. You have a book in your library that we've never seen. Would you be willing to share that with us?
So
it is disability, yes, but it's also those, you know, all genders, all cultures, all ages. And the sharing, the community that comes together and does that, it's always an eye-opener, because we tend to lump people, you know, we tend to do that, you know, if you're a senior or if you're, you know, I don't know if you come from this culture or if you're from the LGBTQ community or if you're in a wheelchair or if you have cerebral palsy or if you, you know, have Down syndrome. You know, the whole point is, do you want to be in just that bubble, or do you want to share with the broader community and be create together? And that way we kind of learn and develop relationships that normally, I think, in society aren't always approachable, or, you know, aren't always a shared thing.
So I'm curious, in your time with Theater yeah. Terrific, has there been any success story where bringing together persons with disabilities, persons of different culture, gender, what have you, has there been any success where you've seen such groups working together that really really speaks to you, really stands out?
Oh, you know, every time. I have to tell you, like, every time, you know, we've done, or in my time, I've done about 37 productions. Really speaks to you, you know? I'll think of one show. We did a show called Working, Working, W-O-R-K-I-N. How do you define work? What is work for you? And it was very interesting how, for example, we had Indigenous, we had people who had a paying job, we had people who, for one example I'm giving, and I say this with great respect because she just passed away last year, in a wheelchair. It had a very long name for her disability. And she hasn't ever worked in the work, you know, what we call, let's say, a working environment. So I asked her, I said, you know, what would be work for you? So she dictated a speech. We put it on a, what is it called, a music stand? Yep. And her work became, because speaking was difficult for her, became to turn the pages of her speech that we had written in big letters so that the audience could read it. And that was her work. Another success story, a wonderful young woman came to us. She was 18, I think, yes, at the time. She had autism, and she was mute. She was a chosen mute. We did workshops. We were developing something together, and afterwards I would put out drawing and paint supplies, and we put on music, and I say, just draw and paint what you thought this was about today. And we found out that she could paint. She was brilliant. And when her mother came to pick her up, I said, I want to humbly say, but I think your daughter speaks through art. So we developed a show. And in that show, we had a huge board. And her job, I said, your job, this ran for 2 weeks for, what, how many shows did we do? Six. And I said, Jacinth, your job is to fill this large space up with whatever you feel is your time. And so during the show, we gave, I can't remember the amount of time, just in silence, and she painted. Just painted in silence. Afterwards, the audience wouldn't go away. And the person they wanted to see and speak and ask questions to was about her and her painting. That was her voice. So, and there's so many stories like that. Yeah, so many stories. But when you're creating what is a, let's say, a performative essence, be it dance or voice or speech, whatever, it comes in many forms. And throughout the years, for example, those are two examples of learning what is, what are people's forms of telling their story and doing that in so many different ways and recognizing that, wow, that there was the book in your library that you told us about. For example, I want to tell you when Jacinth painted, she painted a woman sitting in a chair and a man was kneeling beside her and had put his head on her lap. That's what she had painted.
Amazing.
There's a story.
Like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
My friends, I'm just going to say it. I love what Theater Terrific is doing, not just in meeting people where they are in their disability journey, but in their life journey. Coming together in common cause reminds us that we're all just people, no matter what our abilities look like. No matter where we come from, no matter what makes us special. Fact is, as a community, we're not complete without any one of those beautiful threads. The truth is, coming together and sharing the life stories of people with disabilities is a cool, relatable thing. Something definitely to be encouraged. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.